Welcome back to another episode of Force Proximity. I'm Jonathan, and with me, of course, is Megan. This week's episode is 25 Days Till Christmas by Poppy Alexander.
Great job remembering the author's name.
And it is a...
Women's fiction.
Yeah, it's a branch off for us. It's not a romance. It's a women's fiction with a romance in it.
Mm-hmm. Most women's fiction has a romantic subplot.
Yeah. But it is a branching off for us a little bit.
Yeah, and we're going to be doing that a lot more next year.
Yes, in 2022. The cat is outside the room. Okay, good. I did a synopsis. Do you want me to do that first? Do you want to talk about anything else before we get into the book?
Well, I feel like we should always talk about something.
Well, tonight... We're filming on a Sunday night. Filming, recording. Filming is something also we hope to bring in 2022. That might be a 2023 thing.
We'll see. We shall see. Yeah. I want to see what YouTube's up to, because I feel like a lot of people are going to stop watching.
Because of the ads.
They don't want to pay for it, and they don't want to get it interrupted every 15 seconds.
Yeah, it is every 15 seconds now.
I mean, not literally, but it feels like it. It's awful.
And the skip ad feature, I'm seeing less and less.
Oh, really? I feel like I see it about the same. No, those in the video embedded ads where they just like stop the video and branch off to, you know, have an ad for whatever stupid thing you're not ever going to buy. Those cannot be skipped. They're usually a little bit shorter, but it's like right in the middle of a sentence when you're listening to someone talk.
And you used to be able to just fast forward all the way to the end.
Yeah.
And then bring it back and the ads would be gone.
Really?
That lasted like a day.
Oh, of course they got wise to that. There's no hacks when there's money to be made.
No. I mean, you could just buy YouTube, but that's just another streaming service to add to the a la carte.
Exactly.
That's...
Yeah.
Which sucks, because YouTube was a platform for, like...
Self-starters.
Yeah. Now...
Yeah, it was the... I mean, it's like the... It's the self-publishing for...
And now it's like... It's going to drive everyone back to cable.
Yeah.
Whatever. There might be another platform. I don't know. Probably not. It's just annoying. And even people who don't get monetized now have ads.
Oh, so they're not even making
money. So they don't even make money off of those ads.
Okay.
It used to be about the creators. Now it's about the platform.
Platforms are exhausting.
But I don't know. I guess you have to do it. I mean, maybe not. It's not like this...
I mean, I don't think YouTube is hurting for money, but at the same time, you can't leave cash if it's on the table. And that's basically what they were doing before.
Well, I don't know if it was on the table before. Now it is.
Well, they built the table to put the cash on.
Yeah. Well, tonight you had your book club had...
I just came from a party, so I am not very energized.
Yes, that would suck the energy out of you.
Mm-hmm. So I apologize in advance. At least I'm like socially lubricated and words are coming a little quicker. I've had some wine already. And so that's good. But I'm sort of exhausted from people. So
what was the party?
Oh, it was...
I think whoever's listening would think it's interesting.
Okay, so my book club is a neighborhood book club, and I started it because we live with my mom, and she is housebound for the most part. And so I started this book club so that my mom would have people that would come to our house and hang out, and we go to other people's houses as well. But because of that, we were new to the state of Illinois from Florida. We were new to the neighborhood. I put a thing on our neighborhood Facebook like, hey, does anybody like wine and food? And maybe we'll also talk about some books here and there.
Yeah.
And people responded. So we picked a day. 12 people came over to our house that I never knew. And now they're like our best friends, my best friends, not Jonathan's because he barely knows them. But yeah, it's been a great group of, it's all women. It doesn't have to be, but most book clubs are.
Yeah.
So I really am thankful for book club. But so our December meeting, we try to do something a little bit special in December. And we're always going through like innovations because I don't like to keep things the same all the time. But so for our December meeting, we try to have a little bit of a Christmas party, but really low key and to not stress anybody out because I know everybody has, you know, work Christmas parties mm-hmm. and, you know, other social functions. We don't really have anything else going on. So no. This is our Christmas party. And it was for book club and we did a cookie swap and it was really great. And everybody made 4-5 dozen of one type of cookie. And they walked away with, you know, 3 or 4 cookies of 10 different kinds of cookie. So it's like you have been baking all of December, but you only had to make one cookie.
Yeah.
And it's a lot easier to just double a recipe than to
make more recipes.
Yeah. To make 10 different recipes. Because I always want to make 10 different cookies. And it's so hard to narrow down. And then I do narrow it down. And it's like, oh, I have 3 different caramel cookies. Because that's where my head goes to.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I have 12 different sugar cookies. You know, something stupid. But I wouldn't think to make a chocolate peanut butter cookie at Christmas time. But people brought that. And it's a great addition to the cookie box. So I had a lot of fun tonight. I think the book club had a lot of fun tonight. There was a lot of wine flowing and we had heavy appetizers. And so I just came from a very festive Christmas environment upstairs in my kitchen.
Well, I was in the basement watching football folding laundry, which is great for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always want to start something in the neighborhood, something like that too,
mm-hmm.
where people come and lift weights.
Yeah.
But it's just weird coming down to the basement. Because you have to go, something about going through the house and coming down the stairs, it's just not aesthetic as just going into the garage and doing it.
Well, I think people feel comfortable going into a garage that's open. You can see it when you drive by.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But come into my basement.
Yeah, I just don't think it would work.
I think it would work. I think it just needs a couple of months to catch on. Like book club,
but
the first month, everyone was like, do I eat these weird rose-scented scones or do I not? Like, I don't know these people. Like, nobody wanted to talk about the book. Nobody wanted to, like, people wanted to drink, but they didn't drink as heavily as they do now because like everyone's a drinker and everyone feels comfortable pouring themselves 2 glasses of wine.
Yeah.
When at first they're like, no, I only drink 1 glass. But I think have to give it a few months.
I disagree that it would work in the basement. Like if it was 10 people, it's crammed down there.
Oh no, you can't have a, you know, weightlifting club of 10
people.
I know. No, that wouldn't work.
No. It wouldn't.
If guys are coming over into the basement and there's like several of them, it's kind of like, hey, look at that play. Let me do a set of, you know.
And that's not what I want it to be.
Benches.
Either.
I know, but that's what that would turn
into. Yeah. The basement is fine for guys come. Like we have a huge projector and it's great to watch sports on it. Not so much movies because it's older. But for sports, it doesn't matter. But I am so busy all the time now.
Yeah.
I just can't do it.
Yeah.
So that's the trade-off of being gainfully employed. You don't have time to do anything.
I think it would be different if you had a set group of guys, if they knew that, and if they knew, if I knew, like, hey, every other Tuesday we do this thing, or every, you know, Tuesday, Thursday, whatever it is. It's hard to start something and expect it to be a regular thing when there's, you know, when you're canceling all the time because you have sports games.
Yeah.
or, you know, whatever the reason it is. You can't expect regularity when you're, you know, not regularly offering whatever it is.
And the weekends would be fine.
Yeah.
But I'm also in a community where nobody leaves here and everyone already has their group of friends.
Yeah, that's hard. Midwesterners and their family, man, they're weird. They're weird that they want to hang out with the people that gave birth to them. I think that's weird.
Yeah. I don't think that's weird.
Yeah.
I don't think
I feel
weird.
Like that's not...
But you hang out with your mom all the time.
If I wasn't... Okay, if we lived apart from my mom and we weren't pressured to hang out with her, like, you know, how my mom pressures. If we weren't, like, you know, guilted into hanging out with her and we lived apart from her, I wouldn't miss a friend obligation because I had to hang out with my mom. Like,
you mean
if it's something I like, oh no, we can't do anything with friends because every Saturday is family day. No, that's bullshit.
Yeah, I don't think your mom would expect that either.
No. If you've seen your parents before, like forge new friendships. Forge and move ahead.
You think that happens where people...
I think that's a Midwestern thing.
Don't hang out with other people because, like, Saturday's the day they go to their mom's house.
Yep. Yeah. The people that I've known, some... Well, not everybody, of course, but I feel like people are very, very tied to their families of origin in the Midwest. In the East, I think everybody is, like, psychologically messed up by their families of origin, and they've come to terms with that. And they're like, I can't hang out with you. Let me do Thanksgiving with friends. Let me do Christmas with friends.
Yeah.
Let me do, you know, like, parents are something you have to see a few times a year in the East Coast. They're like your obligation. You don't, like, not hang out with friends because you have to hang out with your parents. Like, you see your parents for an hour, and then you kiss your mom goodbye. This is if you're on good terms with your parents. You kiss your mom goodbye. Like, see ya. I'm, like, you know, going on a date. I'm going on, you know, I'm hanging out with friends. Like, we do going out stuff now.
And I wonder, like, the parents also have things going on, too. They have their friends. It's not like they're just sitting in their house all day.
I think the parents, maybe they have their friends, but maybe they also just want to be like, oh, thank God they're gone. Now I can just drink a beer and watch Hallmark. Drink a beer and watch the game.
I don't know.
Maybe
I don't know if I agree with that.
Okay, so the people that I have known, like, had really close friendships with,
that might be your...
have not been on great terms with their parents.
Yeah.
But even the ones that are, you know, they have a good relationship, they're not completely messed up by their parents. They still don't hang out with them all the time.
I think that might be your truth. Or your experience.
That's what I'm comfortable with. I will definitely say that.
I think that's your... what you've seen, I don't think that's true for East Coast or any coast. I do think the Midwest is a lot more family oriented.
Yeah. Family of origin oriented.
Yeah.
I'll go as far as that, because I think everywhere is family oriented. I mean, you can't help but, like, bring your 5-year-old along if you're going to do something with your husband.
Yeah.
Or your kids. You know, if you have multiple children, your lives revolve around those kids. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know anybody from, like, the high school that I came from that hangs out with their parents on a weekly basis, or, you know, bi-weekly basis, or doesn't make plans with friends in order to hang out with people that they've known forever that are not their friends.
That
they're your parents.
I don't mind a standing date with the parents. Like, oh, let's just go to my mom's, even if it's just for coffee once a week. But my mom would understand, oh, you have a friend thing. Okay, have fun.
Yeah.
Go have fun. We'll see you next week. And, oh, you missed last week? Okay. There would be no hard feelings if it went a month without seeing.
Right.
But I don't think that's... I think that's as far as it goes. I don't think it's anything... Like, when we still lived in Florida, and we lived in a few towns over, a few towns,
it was like 10 minutes. It's kind of different with us, because we were involved in the same things your mom was involved in, because we had the church.
Yeah.
So we would see her, at the very least, we would see her at church.
Yeah. But, and when we lived there, Hank was just born. We moved here, and Hank was 18 months old.
Right.
So they came a lot to see Hank.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, I don't really know what would be now if we still live in Florida or if my parents live closer.
I don't like standing dates. I don't like that. Like, if I have to be somewhere, I don't want to be there.
Yeah, it depends what it is. Depends what it is. Like work, that's a standing date I have.
Exactly. I couldn't work anymore. I would be dysfunctional if I had to go to a job. I'm not capable of that, like, emotionally. So, yeah, Midwest, family of origin. Like, I don't, maybe it's just Illinois, but.
I haven't been much places in the Midwest either, so.
Yeah, call it one semester of college in Indiana doesn't really count. I didn't really get to know anybody.
Where was I even going with that? Oh.
I don't know.
Did I
bring us down again?
You did.
Okay.
I told Megan the other day, like, your tangents get really dark and depressing. She goes, it's me. What did you expect?
I'm dark.
Well, my thing was having... we had a guy's night with a few guys from work, and half of them don't work there anymore.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, when people leave, like, oh, we're going to hang out. It's like, no, we're not. We're not.
Mm-hmm.
You say we are, but we're not. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know it's not.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what it is. It's like, it's out of sight, out of mind, I bet, is what it boils down to.
We were talking at the party about, somebody brought up about how it's a shame that we don't like dress fancy on a regular basis. Like, isn't it nice, at least like the sort of the level of formality and like getting dolled up on a daily basis. There's something about that aspect that's kind of nice that we miss today. And not always by any means, but I think it's sort of something else that has changed about society, which is, and I'll also lump this in, like, men in the delivery room. It's sort of the same thing. It's great, you know, we used to have men, you know, sitting outside smoking in the you know, your wife's doing the work lounge, whatever it is. Now you have to have your husband involved in your birth. You have to have, like, your husband has to be involved in every aspect of family life. You have to be involved. Like, so I think we've trained, like, mothers and fathers that you cannot have a life outside your family. And you know how everything is a pendulum. You talk about this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now it's like swung so far that you can't do anything without your immediate family. Like, you always have to be there because, you know, back in the day, men were absent fathers and we can't have that. So you need to be constantly present at. And maybe that's doing a disservice to you, because, like, you as men, because you're not getting filled up with, you know, your Thursday night poker nights.
Yeah.
Or your, you know.
Well.
Whatever it is men would do. Like, you know.
Speaking of the pendulum, I think it's just, it's not even that the men were not involved. It was, you have a generation of people that are latchkey kids that are now the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And they're thinking, I'm not going to do that because I want to be there because my parents weren't there.
I think you have an equal number of being like, this is crap. Like, my kids can just be latchkey kids.
Well, I don't know.
Why do we have to be there? I was there and I was fine.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, not that I am fine.
Well,
I was also not a latchkey kid. My dad was home.
Well, that's probably why you're not fine. What was I going to say? Oh, I'm seeing more and more, and maybe it's because of COVID, but I don't know. We allow parents to come watch their kids again because it's whatever. Like, yeah, there's no more mitigation for that. Like, you can come watch, you just have to wear a mask. But I'm seeing more kids getting dropped off and their parents leaving.
Yeah.
Because they're probably like, oh, that was nice. And the kid doesn't care. They get to play whatever sport they're playing at the moment and hang out with their friends in a not school environment, but it's still safe. Like, they still feel safe to try. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And they don't have the pressure of their parents being there.
Yeah. I think that's great. I hope we see more of that because I think kids do need to develop apart from their parents.
Yeah. But, I mean,
but that puts a lot of pressure on the one adult that's in charge of an activity of 50 children or however many children are involved.
Not really. Not if they're coaching it. Not if it's a coach.
Okay.
Why does it put pressure on them?
Because now you have to make sure that, like, the kids that aren't acting up. If one kid's a bully, you have to keep that in mind.
Oh, that's, coaches do that. You still involve the parent if it's major.
Okay.
That's not an issue.
Okay.
All right, let's get to the book.
Okay.
25, I'm going to read a synopsis that I wrote while you were at your party. 25 Days Till Christmas by Poppy Alexander is a bit of a branch off for us on Forced Proximity. This dual POV is more of a women's lit with a romance than a straight up romance. And I think the dual POV is 70-30 if I had to put a ratio on it.
Yeah, it's way more Kate to Daniel.
Yeah. The story follows two very sad people.
It does.
Heroine Kate Potter is a widowed single mother to a little boy who's having a difficult time in school. To make matters worse, all of her late husband's military pension is tied up in keeping his grandmother in a care facility for dementia. Mm-hmm. Every month, Kate has to make magic happen to keep a roof over their head, the lights on, and enough food in their bellies. Her job is not great, to say the least. She works at a department store with seemingly pre-workers' rights conditions. Since it's the holiday, she's charged with selling Christmas trees. But that's not enough. She must sell and load them dressed as a slutty elf. The one bright spot in her day is when she sees a mysterious man, handsome man, that used to come every year with a young lady. Except this year, there is no young lady. This leads us to Daniel, our hero. He is mourning the loss of his sister, Zoe, the young lady she would always see him with. Daniel works, is it real estate? Something with real estate or?
I think it's a position that doesn't exist in the U.S.
Okay.
He's some kind of, I have no idea what he does. And I don't know if his position is pure fiction. Because it needed to be, because he needed to, like get really personal with his clients.
Yeah,
that he was.
It was weird.
Doing some kind of real estate-iness with.
That's.
But I also don't know if he worked for the government with the taxes either. So that was a little vague. And I don't know if that's because it was just. To fit in or because, like, Britain really has that position.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
That's why I said he was in real estate.
Yeah.
But he also volunteers for the suicide helpline. He's basically just surviving and going through the motions, numb to life. However, his bright spot is seeing the cute elf who sells Christmas trees on his route to work. After a few weeks, he works up the nerve to talk to her and begins to live his life again slowly. Kate also becomes comfortable with the idea of loving another person the more they hang out. This feel-good story may just be a new Christmas classic.
Okay, for me, it's definitely a Christmas classic. It's the second year in a row I've read this book. I love it. I feel like this is the end of this. Like, it's work. The first, you know, I read this last year, and I was like, it's depressing.
It's super hard. It's not hard to read. It's a very, I want to say easy read.
It's a fun read.
It's a fun
There's
read.
So much great imagery.
Yeah.
You really get a sense of what, like, Christmas in Bristol, England is like, and there's the Christmas steps, and, like, you can feel what it's like to be in Kate and her son's apartment, and it's great writing, and it's entertaining, and it's warm, but at the same time, it's like she can never get a break. And she's already like at her wit's end. It's Christmas. Everything is going wrong in her life. She's broke. And Christmas is really crap time to be broke.
Mm-hmm.
And she like just her whole world is falling apart. And at the end, you have it's not like It's a Wonderful Life. I mean, it's not the same sort of ending. It's similar. But when everybody's rushing to empty out their pockets for Jordan Bailey and like the bell is ringing
there
and
is
they're
that.
At the Christmas party and the band is playing in the living room and you know, Peter's playing whatever on the piano really badly and it's chaos and it's kind of like that at the end. It's just, it's so moving and it's so warm. It's a perfect Christmas read.
I would say it's like a mixture of It's a Wonderful Life
mm-hmm.
and kind of A Christmas Carol, whereas...
Yeah, the same
instead
sort of...
Instead of Scrooge, like, giving out things.
Yeah.
It's like she's Scrooge and everyone gave stuff to her. She got everything.
Sort of.
But she earned it. I mean, it was hard.
Yeah.
If anyone deserved it, it was her.
Yes. And you feel like you feel just so like happy for her that
I felt like
things
a,
are.
I felt the weight off her shoulders, off of my shoulders.
Yes, that's the perfect way to describe why you need to read this book during Christmas.
Yeah.
I also love the fact that. Like the whole idea about these strangers. And you know how like you see people on a regular basis, but you have no idea anything about their lives. But you feel like you know them because you see them all the time.
Yeah.
When you've never talked to them, like have you ever had people like that? There's been like people like that. Like, I don't know, gas station workers, like
gas, probably
the people that return the carts at a grocery store. Just anybody.
I don't, because I go from home to work to home. I go nowhere.
And you actually talk to the people that you worked with. Like if I worked in your job, there would be people like that there because I don't speak to people.
I mean,
so
there
you
are,
will like you will introduce yourself and talk to them.
Yeah.
I will not. I will be like, oh, that bald guy that works in that building. I would have no idea who he is.
I was going to say there are other buildings that we don't directly work with. Like mm-hmm. the STEM building, which is an after school building that has its own staff.
Okay.
That I used to know when I worked summer camps. But now that I don't work summer camps, and that staff rolls over every year.
Okay.
So every year there's new people there.
Okay, well, that's not the same thing as this then.
No, but I don't have like, if I get gas, I don't go in. I don't see anybody.
Well, no, I'm not.
But I know what you're saying. Like, you have your route to work and you see the same people on your route to work.
Yeah.
On their route to whatever they're doing every day.
Yeah.
And you feel like you know them, but you don't.
Well, okay. I worked as a bank teller.
Okay.
And this is probably where I'm getting this idea from. But, you know, as a bank teller, you know an awful lot about people, but only like a sliver of their lives.
You know their financial status.
Yeah. But even still, like, I worked at a bank where you had to call people by their names.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very good with names. And so I would see a person once, I would call them by their name because, you know, their name is on their checkbook or their name is on their debit card or license when you ask them to cash a check. So you go, thank you for banking at blah, 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 Mr. Jones, like, have a nice day.
Yeah.
So then the next day they come in and I was trained by my first manager at my first bank to, like, welcome them by name if you know them, their name. Well, I would do that. And after the I waited on them one time and I'd be like, hey, Mr. Jones, welcome to blah, blah, blah bank. And they would be like, oh my, like, that's weird. Like, how do you know my name? But then a lot of people would be like, oh my God, you know my name? And yeah. It was so touching to them. And I'd be like, oh, don't worry. I'm just good with names. And I am. I'm very good with names if I'm paying attention. And, but you know, you see, like, you start to develop a routine. And so I moved to the second bank that I worked. And it was the bank where all of the Scientologists would bank.
It was right in Clearwater.
It's in downtown across, Clearwater, Florida.
Right across the street from the capital of Scientology.
Yep. And so we would know, like, oh, it's Scientology Friday. Everyone would come in and cash their, like, measly paycheck. Sorry, Scientology, but, you know, pay your people. They would, you know, all get their checks cashed, and I knew, like, oh, this is so-and-so, he's from Hungary, and I would learn how to say, like, whatever it was in Hungarian, and this is so-and-so, and, like, you get to know people, and you know exactly what time of the month they're gonna show up. Like, the third of the month is when everyone comes in to cash their social security checks.
Yeah.
So you know you're gonna see, oh, okay, today's the day I'm gonna see these 35 customers that
people.
I see every third of the month.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just, you develop a connection, but you really have no connection. And I think that's what I really like about Kate and Daniel, is that you have both of them doing it. And I think that's a great premise, because you have, you know, Kate's going about her day. She's narrating. You're reading the book. Things are happening that are crap in her life. And, mm-hmm. Oh, there's that guy in the overcoat. Like, where's the girl that was with him? I wonder what like, she was always there. Like, and now she's not. And I have a feeling, like, she can't be without him. So I wonder what happened there. So she's like, she's just, you know, thinking in her head, like, wondering what's going on, creating this story in her head, asking herself all these questions. And I think a lot of us do that. Like, I'll, you know, you see the same people, you know, asking for money on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And they become well known to the community, that at least they are here, because there are not a lot of them. And people know, and they've created Facebook pages for them, like, okay, this guy legit had bone cancer, or this guy is really a war veteran. This is gossip that I've heard. I haven't actually been on the Facebook pages, and I don't know who's who, but you know things about them, but they don't know you're even looking at them. And I think that's really just fascinating. I think I'm fascinated as a writer, because I think all writers probably feel like they have a connection to a lot of people that they observe.
Just people watchers.
Yeah. But he's doing the same thing. And I think that steps it up a level, because she is the Christmas tree girl. And that's what he calls her in her head.
Yeah, he does.
He calls her Christmas tree girl in his head until he finally learns her name. But she'll always sort of be Christmas tree girl.
And even at the end, he calls her that.
Yeah. She's like, what? He's like, oh, yeah, that's I've known you for years. That's what you are in my head. But that's great because they had such a long standing.
They did.
Dual connection, like dual separate but equal connection. So I really.
And they were both thinking the same thing and they're both afraid to approach each other.
Yeah.
That was funny.
But yet if romance teaches us everything, that anything, if you're thinking one thing, that guy's probably thinking the exact same about you.
Yeah.
Real life teaches you, if you're thinking one thing, that guy doesn't even know what you look like.
Probably.
He's never looked in your direction.
All right. So let's talk about the characters a little bit more. Kate, yep. Like we said, is there anything you need to add to Kate?
Her husband died in the war.
He died in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Stepped on an IED.
So she's not an old person. He didn't die of cancer. I think that's a different kind of like psychological trauma.
Yeah.
Both are equally traumatic, but just different. She has a son who has...
Jack. He's called Jack, like they say over there.
Yep. He does not have autism. He's not diagnosed with anything, but it's clear that he has special needs. And that's what they say in the book, that his teachers are concerned that he has special needs. She hears special needs and freaks out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the first time I read it, I was like, oh, this, like, why would you freak out about that? Your son has special needs. Like, find out what those needs are and accommodate those needs. It's not anything that you need to freak out about. But most people are not like that. Most people hear special needs and they're like, oh, my God, autism. Like, I don't know how to deal with this because that means you're crazy.
And I don't know. And I don't know if it's that. For Kate, I don't think it was that. I think if it was, how is society going to treat my son now?
And I think it was like, oh my God, this is one more thing.
Yeah.
Like, this is the only school he can go to. This is the end of the road. What am I going to do now? It was just one more thing.
Yeah.
I think if you had caught her on a good day where she was making money, and, you know, wasn't...
Not even, like, crazy money. Just regular money.
Yeah.
Because they are poor.
Mm-hmm.
She went to college, right?
I don't know.
But she's a jewelry maker, too. Well, I don't know if she, like, she went to trade school. My point is she has a trade. She makes jewelry. And the plan for her and her husband was for when he was done serving, she was going to start crafting her jewelry in the spare bedroom in a house that they would be able to afford.
And I don't think Jonathan and I, we talked about this yesterday because you're like, well, what kind of jewelry is she making? And I said, I think it's the kind where she's a silversmith or
like
a goldsmith.
Making real jewelry.
She is soldering, creating like beautiful jewelry that you would buy in a jewelry. I don't think she's like getting beads from Michaels and putting them like on a fishing line.
Like leather work and stuff.
Where like the book seems like she's just getting some beads and throwing them on fishing
line.
That
is what it seems like.
Tying them onto earrings. Like, so how is she going to have a shop and sustain that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're meant to believe that she's an actual jeweler.
Yes.
But I think it's the fact that that was supposed to be a surprise. There's a lot of things that are sort of hidden, like the fact that Jack has special needs and the fact, like, they hide who Daniel's young woman was.
For a while.
Which doesn't make sense because the woman has Down syndrome.
Yeah.
Most likely that's not his wife. I'm just saying, like, most likely you see a woman with Down syndrome in a wheelchair and Daniel pushing her. I don't think...
Parent or brother, you're thinking.
Yes.
Or cousin or related.
Or friend.
Friend.
I don't think you're thinking that's his romantic partner. I think we're meant to be misled into thinking that she might be his romantic partner.
Yeah.
The way he talks about her, like he's so over the top sad about her. Did you feel that way? I mean,
yeah, but it's his little sister.
Okay.
That he loved. I could see him being over the top sad about that.
But he's and he just lost his parents as well.
Yeah.
So his parent, compounding. His mother, his father, and his sister died in a span of 3 years or something. Something yeah. very dramatic. But at the same time, he's only focused on his sister. And her death was not a surprise.
No, but I think he was her sole caregiver for a long time.
For a year.
That's a long time.
Yeah, I just feel like that would...
That's a daily
it was
routine.
Long enough, though, that I feel like you might be kind of relieved.
You might. Daniel wasn't.
Yeah, I know. I'm just wondering, is like maybe I'm just completely jaded or... Or, but no, I think he was written that way because we were meant to believe that it was more than a sister, that it was like a romantic.
Yeah, maybe.
And that's
it just
what,
missed the mark.
That's my complaint, is yeah. not that I'm such a horrible person. I know I am, like, fine. But I think he was written in a way that we're meant to be misled into thinking.
So that is that what you would classify as what didn't work for you?
Yes, that didn't work. I'm still kind of on the heroin.
I know, but you...
But I did answer that question.
You answered number three. What
that
didn't
works.
Work?
That did not work. Like, there's a lot of things that we're supposed to be misled into thinking in this book. And I feel like you can't be an unreliable narrator when you're narrating what you're looking at. Like, you see what you see. Mm-hmm. You might know the story behind... You might not know the story behind it. But you know what you see.
Yeah.
And the fact that you are not telling us what you see, that's like, I feel like that's a writing,
little too,
that's a writing problem.
A little too unreliable.
Yeah, that's like somebody saying, I'm going to make this an unreliable narrator because it serves the plot better. But nothing serves the plot if it doesn't make sense.
And it wouldn't have hurt anything in the story.
No, I don't think you
need... For her to say...
Her husband. We didn't know why her husband died at first. And yeah. I understand you want to, you know... It's fine to reveal that information slowly. But the fact that he was in Afghanistan, it doesn't really matter to the plot. It doesn't matter how he died. So yeah. Why was that a big reveal?
So I'm going to... jump ahead there to number three, to what didn't work for me, is this book was long. And that's what...
Yeah.
Those are the things that made it, like, unnecessarily long.
I agree.
Because it... I was listening to it. I wasn't even reading it. Because I was doing other things while it was... Which I'm probably going to continue to do, because I got a lot done just listening to it, not sitting and following along.
See, I feel like that there's so much... When I read this book, and I do feel like a lot was lost by listening to it. When I read this book in like 3 days. I devoured this book.
Okay.
And I feel like it's because I was reading it. And I feel like so much is lost when I listen.
I have too much going on.
Okay.
I need to, like, I have a lot of things I need to do.
Yeah.
And if this helps me read a book, that's what I have to do.
I agree. I'm just saying maybe... I don't know. And maybe you are a better listener than I am.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's true because I think anybody is. unless I'm listening and taking notes at the same time.
I was with it enough to know that this book is longer than it needs to be.
Okay.
And I think those things that you're saying, those unnecessarily slow reveals,
yeah,
made it longer.
Yeah. I think just the fact that so many non-plot points are revealed in, like, it's like a gotcha.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't have to get me, though.
Yeah.
Like, why did you have to get me? Like, Why did you have to take half the book to reveal that the woman that died that Daniel's so upset about is his sister? And I think it's like, oh, well, now he's free to be with Kate because he's not a widower. He doesn't have to grieve the loss of a wife or a partner or a girlfriend. Like, it was just his sister and she wasn't romantic. So we can...
Well, it did kind of address that where he couldn't have relationships very much after his parents died.
But why not reveal that in the beginning? There was no reason to him wallowing in his grief for the full first half of the book. It felt like it's like
maybe because she didn't want to write him as being relieved that she was gone.
He can wallow in his grief and reveal that sooner, and then he could have had more of a hand in the book, I feel
and been
like.
In it more.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's what I mean.
Because he was a good character. So let's talk about Daniel.
Okay.
So we've talked a lot about the grief part and why he's grieving.
Right.
And
he had a sister who had heart. She had a congenital heart defect. She wasn't supposed to last. She wasn't supposed to live past like a week or
best
a day.
Best use by date.
But she ended up living until she was 21. So they knew, like, her life had a timestamp marked on it.
Yeah.
And it was, like, all the years past 1 week were a blessing to the family.
Yeah.
He had a great family. He had a great mom and dad who were her caretakers. And then they died, and it was...
I thought his independent wealth was going to be more... involved, because he's talked about like them summering in a villa that their parents owned.
Oh,
or some like a manor, something like that. They had money,
huh?
And he lived on a boat.
It was a nice boat, I think.
I don't think so.
You don't?
It was probably nice, but it wasn't like a yacht.
No, I don't think it was a yacht. I think it was like the houseboats, the dock at the canals.
Yeah,
there.
Sometimes they're nice, sometimes they're not. It was probably fine. But, yeah,
I just thought that was a life choice that he made.
I'm glad his independent wealth wasn't involved. Because I don't like when... This is the first time we've read something where money was a factor.
Yes, and I also really appreciate that. Because in romance, like... people are just, you know, going out to coffee shops every day.
Yeah.
They're not like, oh, you know what? I can't afford that brownie. I'll just stick with a latte. Like, they're like, I will have the latte and the brownie that I get every day.
And what do you want?
For snack.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, $10 right there. Plus, I still need to eat lunch out. Plus, like, I'm
going
to go.
And I look great.
Yeah. Everybody has infinite money in romance.
Infinite money and a 5,000 calorie budget a day.
That's true. Not my characters.
No.
But that's because I think about those things.
Yeah.
Because they bother me.
It really
bothers me.
I appreciated money actually being a factor and like limiting our heroine on
yes.
a lot of things.
Yeah.
And part of her character was how was she going to juggle this? And the villain was the poverty.
Yes. And I really liked that she wasn't shamed for not having money.
Well, yes, she was.
Not by the writer.
No.
Not in the book. Like, it wasn't her fault. There was, like, situation beyond her control. And you started out, you see her at a low point where she is, like, counting her pennies to make sure she can afford, you know, a Christmas tree, an advent calendar, candy to put in the advent calendar.
And she couldn't. She got lucky.
She couldn't afford any of these things. And it's so easy to take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and think, oh, I'm poor because I can't buy my son an iPhone. But that's not even, like, you're poor because you can't even buy milk.
Yeah.
And that's the situation she was in. She was really, she was strict on her finances, and she still couldn't afford these, like, necessities.
Uh-huh.
Plus, trying to give a 6-year-old son this really special Christmas. And that's, it's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how she feels. And I, that's something that I very much appreciate
mm-hmm.
in this book.
Makes you appreciate what you do have.
Yeah. Exactly.
Any notable side characters? There were a lot of side characters, and like it probably have its own episode.
Yeah, I don't want to go through them all, but there's like Noel from the Christmas Steps, mm-hmm. the guy that who's in the end, she buys his shop.
Yeah.
Sort of. I think it's alluded to, but he runs the oldie Christmas shoppy or oldie candy shoppy.
Yeah.
That's on the Christmas Steps.
And Daniel actually calls it that.
Yeah.
And his friend's like, what are you, seven?
And he's very old. He's in his 90s. He's on death's door, and he wants to leave the shop to somebody
who's not a
disposable cell phone company.
Wasn't he a Holocaust refugee?
Was he?
I think so.
Okay.
Or his parents were. And he was born in England, but his parents fled the Nazis.
Okay. But his name was Noel because he was born on Christmas. Okay.
I didn't write the book. I'm just telling you what I've read.
Oh, okay.
I heard.
That. So he's like this angelic kind of character.
He is.
Is sort of magical. Every side character is really well thought out. They might be in the book for a very brief time period, but they make an impact. Like I feel like I could see each character as somebody completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And they all come in and they're woven in really well. They make an impact on Kate's life. Like Barb, is it her name, Barb? Her friend from work?
Pat,
that's right. Pat comes in and
her sister Ursula.
Yeah, Pat comes in and gives her the advent calendar
that she knitted like one too many or something, or she was gonna donate it to the church for something. She's like, why am I gonna give it to the church to give to some needy kid when you have a needy kid?
Right, and this is how Kate gets through Christmas. Like these little miracles keep happening to keep her afloat.
And she already put the chocolates in it. So Kate didn't have to go buy the chocolates.
Yeah.
And then she's like, and it was a nice knitted advent calendar that she can use year after year after year. And Jack loved it. He got his advent calendar. He ends up getting his Christmas tree at the end.
Yeah. The book is set up according to the advent calendar too. So mm-hmm. it's 25 days till Christmas. And then goes to 18 days before Christmas.
And her friend, who is from India...
Yeah.
Or she's Indian, gave her a great idea to write an activity to do every day and put it in the advent calendar. So the morning they open the activity and at night he gets the chocolate.
Yep.
So that was, I thought that was great.
I did too.
Because it made Christmas special because it made the 25 day, like they did something Christmassy every day.
And it really decreases the, you know, the sense of like, the sense of commercialism,
mm-hmm.
which I liked. I try to do things like that.
Like going to watch the tree light was one of the days.
Yeah.
That was cool.
At Christmas Steps.
At Christmas Steps. And then go window shopping, which window shopping sucks.
Well, I don't think it does there.
No, because...
There are places, we used to go window shopping in Annapolis all the time. That's what you do.
You just use it as like, it's kind of like going through a museum.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, and everybody, that's not talky then.
Everybody knows that because really all you want to do is hang out in a beautiful outdoor space.
Mm-hmm.
And there are shops there, so look in the windows.
Who wants to carry all that stuff?
It's like our downtown Mahomet Christmas night.
The one window.
Well, they're all decorated. They're all pretty. And that's all you do. You just go and you look at how they do Christmas in the different shoppies.
Yeah. I think we've touched what worked for us too.
Yeah, a lot of things work in this.
The money thing was what worked for me the best. Like
that
you could feel the pressure she was under. that worked.
Definitely.
How well do you think the author built the world? I don't think she could have done a better job.
Yeah, it was exactly.
It was pretty incredible.
I felt like I could see Bristol, every aspect of it.
I felt cold.
Yes.
Because she was not...
On that bridge at the end.
At the bridge at the end at work when the temperatures dropped and she was wearing that skimpy outfit that she had to wear.
Yeah.
And she could just feel the drafts coming up her skirt and you just feel it, how cold it is. You know that cold, wet, bone-chilling feeling.
Yep.
Well, maybe you don't if you've never been to it, but I love the cold.
Yeah.
And I don't really love that wet, bone-chilling cold.
Well, you love the cold, but there's difference between cold and prepared for it.
Yeah.
With proper, appropriate outer garments.
And she was not.
No, she was wearing an elf costume.
Do you want to talk more about that? I don't think there is much.
No, it's a really great British Christmas story.
Yeah.
So if you want more Love Actually...
Exactly.
Read this.
Yep. Who's your favorite character?
I think Daniel.
Daniel?
Kate was great, but she's a little bit too generic for my taste. She's too much of a good person, and I like my heroines to have a bit of an edge.
Man, I don't know if I have a favorite one in this book.
I loved how Daniel took care of her. Yeah. And it didn't seem to be... Like, this isn't a romance, but I loved the romance between them. And I just love how he was, like, just zeroed in on her. Mm-hmm. And, like, I know that's, like, predatory to some people. It's not to me. It's like, that's what a great romance hero does. You zero in on your person and you like exist to meet their needs. And that's how he acts.
Oh, backing up a bit, I forgot about this.
Yeah.
I guess it's what worked and number four, building the world. This, I don't know if this is so much the writer or the production of reading the book.
Okay.
But all of the different accents. I loved that.
Yeah.
All of the different great British accents that were in this book. If you listen to a book on Audible, it's so awesome.
This is something that I was okay getting on Audible for one thing. We had a long drive ahead of us.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted a book that we both wanted to listen to. And there's no better book than a podcast book for that.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, at least it's a British book, so we're going to hear, like, a beautiful British accent. But she really did, like, the gamut of different, you know, regions and the British accents.
Yeah, so...
Which I think you'd find all over London.
So that has nothing to do with how the author built the world. Get that out of there. It worked. That's what worked for me in listening to it on Audible.
Yeah.
Was the different accents. I thought that was just very cool. And I was thinking my favorite character, Clara? The Daniel's
friend's wife?
Yeah. I liked her.
Okay.
Because she was just. I liked her accent.
Yeah.
And she was. She was I don't want to say the start of Kate's turnaround.
Yeah.
But she was like that safety net. Ended up catching Kate and bringing her back up. Because she's the one who got her finances back with the lawsuit against the company and her party that all of her friends like bought thousands of dollars worth of jewelry.
I know.
From her. So yeah. Clara was my favorite.
She saved the day.
Yes.
And I liked that somebody else besides Daniel.
She was the hero.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great. That moment where she like lawyered, she's like, "Oh no, this is very bad." And Kate's like, "Oh, okay.
I'm not going to win." She's like, "No, it's bad for him."
No, it's bad for them.
they're going to pay you a lot of money, like six figures. Yeah. So just get ready to be rich.
Yep. So I loved that mic drop scene that she had.
And my dumb head's like 600,000. It's like, no, like 999,999 is six figures. Like $1 under a million.
No, pounds.
Oh, pounds too. Yeah. Well, that's not that much more anymore.
Not anymore. It used to be like...
It was 2-1.
Yeah.
When I went there, it was 2-1.
Mm-hmm. Still a little more.
It's still a little more, but not like that.
Yeah. I know that because I buy my raws from England and I get really excited when the value of the pound goes down.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, 60 pounds.
Yeah, me too. I get
it. That's like $60.
Now, how do the characters change throughout the story? How you think they would change? Exactly how you think they would. They, like...
I don't think, because it's women's fiction and it's not a romance, you're not assured of that happily ever after.
No.
And so you don't know what Daniel's going to do. He's a little bit of a loose cannon.
He is. You're not assured of the happily ever after, but you do know that it's a Christmas book.
Right.
It's not going to end.
You know she's probably not going to jump off a bridge at the end. Yes.
So it changes how you think it's going to change.
But what I mean is he could have gone really dark he could have sunk into his depression, and that would have been like, he would have been, oh, that's another thing that didn't work out in my life. But, you know, but I have my son, so all is well.
Yeah.
It could have ended that way. But I really feel like Kate was able to lift Daniel out of this, and not necessarily a depression. I don't know if British people get depressed, but a slump. He's definitely in a slump.
Exactly,
because
what I was gonna
use. His life has been changed.
Mm-hmm.
And he is sad. And it's time for him to move forward, and he is unsure how.
Yeah.
And he's unsure how he wants that to look. So Kate helps him with that. But at the same time, he takes to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's I appreciate that.
Yes.
And that he does change in that way. And I don't think it's necessarily, you know, that expected. I think he does a great job of, you know, really getting lifted up because he works for that suicide hotline. Yeah. I think you don't know where that's going to go.
No. Well, there was.
Maybe he's going to be the one calling.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Book boner level is not a question that goes with this book. It's a zero. It's not a.
I'm going to put it at a one.
Really?
Yeah. I think their relationship is like really. The way he loves her, the way he's looking at her.
Yeah.
I think that's hot.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no sex on the page.
No, zero. Not even a kiss, I don't think.
There's a kiss. Yeah, they kiss at the Christmas steps, the tree lighting.
Yes, you're right. You're right. Yeah, okay, fine, one. So, that's 25 Days till Christmas. It's a classic. I think if you haven't read it, you should. Now, I was thinking... When you're talking about jumping off the bridge, I was thinking of A Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
He was going to jump off the bridge to kill himself, right?
Yeah.
And then he jumped off the bridge to save Clarence.
Yeah.
How was he going to kill himself? He jumped off the same damn bridge.
That's part of the point of the movie. That's what Clarence says to him. He says, you weren't going to do it. And he said, how do you know? He's like, because you jumped off the bridge to save me.
Okay. That's but what he means by that?
Yeah. But I also think, you know, he wasn't depressed. He didn't have a history of depression. This was George Bailey, no.
Yeah.
This is a knee-jerk reaction after he had been told he's worth more dead mm-hmm. than alive. He's in a lot of trouble. He's going to jail. His family's going to be destitute, like on the streets. Like, this is, he would be sacrificing himself to save his family.
Yeah.
So it's a knee-jerk reaction that he's having. It's not like a history of depression.
Okay. So very different.
Yeah. So I think that's when Clarence knew, like, Clarence jumped in. Now he has a new purpose. So it just, like, sort of snapped him out of that.
Yeah.
Mindset.
Okay.
Wallowing.
Now shifting gears to another Christmas movie.
Uh-huh.
Duncan's Toy Chest sucks.
Did you watch that?
From Home Alone 2.
You watched Home Alone 2 today? Okay. Why? I know why. You tell the listeners why.
Duncan's Toy Chest?
Yeah.
Has shitty toys in it.
Okay.
What kid wants toys from that place? The best thing they had was what he got was the slime. Duncan's Toy Chest is what adults think a toy store looks like.
Yeah. It's what adults want to buy kids.
Yeah. Like, Duncan's Toy Chest sucks.
Don't you love this giant teddy bear as an 8-year-old boy?
Mm-hmm.
You don't love it?
Don't you want this wooden bike? Like, what? No. I always thought that's what FAO Schwartz was, too.
It is on the ground level.
Yeah, but then you
go
upstairs
up to the video game level and the Barbie level. Yeah.
Well, that doesn't exist anymore either, I don't think.
They closed
Amazon
sometime after 2000. I don't know if they reopened.
Yeah.
Now they have a line of teddy bears.
Yeah.
That you buy at Toys R Us. Although that doesn't exist anymore either.
And Hank and I watched the new Home Alone movie on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
It was pretty okay.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Okay.
It's the sixth installment of Home Alone.
Oh.
And it's the third best.
Okay. They made 5 Home Alones?
Mm-hmm. Home Alone 4 was awful. I don't even know what Home Alone 5 was. And this one is the sixth one. And it flipped it to where the burglars were the good guys.
Okay.
It was the redhead from the later years of The Office that took Pam's job as a secretary. I forget her name.
I don't know.
It was good. But it turned out that there was no villain.
Okay.
It all was a giant misunderstanding.
Okay.
And you hate the kid.
Oh, okay.
I was texting Nat Vig. I was like, I'm watching this new Home Alone. Fuck that kid. That's what I texted. Because he's British.
Why?
Because he's British. And okay. He's rude.
Oh.
And you don't like him.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can watch the new Home Alone movie, it's not that bad.
But you hate the kid.
Not at the end.
Okay. Well, I think I'll be skipping that. So I'm glad you and Hank watched that when I wasn't around. He's been wanting to watch that, but I said he had to wait for you.
Yeah, when we watched it. He liked it. He liked all the booby traps. It was funny because the kid asked Alexa for booby traps.
Yeah.
And Alexa's like, I'm sorry. Anything with the word booby has been blocked. He's like, whatever, I'll do it myself. That, like, the new technology that they put in there,
mm-hmm.
like one of the booby traps was video Oculus glasses.
Okay.
That was funny.
Okay.
The booby traps were they're very funny and creative.
Well, wouldn't that be the point if you're going to reboot Home Alone? Uh-huh. It would be for the new booby traps.
But they also put in the old classics.
Really?
Like throwing the thing off with the string off the staircase.
Yeah.
But they use different things.
Okay.
It was funny. That part was funny. And the slapstick comedy, the physical comedy was really good. All right. With that,
a little extra Christmas. Also, we watched The Hating Game, and that episode will be coming up soon.
Maybe faster than normal.
Maybe next week.
Yeah, it'll be a movie episode. We have to do another Christmas movie, though, so we can do a double feature. Or not.
We have to do The Hating Game because we just watched The Hating Game twice.
You just watched the Hayden game twice.
You just watched it twice too, because it was on while you were on your phone.
No.
Ugh, whatever. You watched it. Didn't you watch it again?
No, I didn't. I went to bed.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I just watched it twice. And you'll have to wait until
next
we tell
week.
You what we think about it.
All right. Till next week. Have a great week. See you later. Bye.